fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
All right, so it looks like it's still recording. I'm recording just the audio, just in case. I hope that I don't have to release just an audio interview, but
let's see what. Yeah, because I put a hat on for this interview, man. Like, yeah, I was expecting video, you know?
That'd be pretty fucked up then. You can get ready for the interview, and then that happened.
How'd the interview go? I want to talk about it.
All right. I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Quick reminder that in addition to hosting Signals from Mars, I've also worked behind the scenes helping other podcasters. With over 16 years of experience and more than 1,200 episodes that I've produced or appeared on, I offer podcasting editing, ghost hosting interviews, and repurposing content into viral clips, show notes, transcripts, and social media posts. If you've got a podcast and need help making it sound professional, or if you want to turn your episodes into content that actually grows your audience, I can help. Check out the podcasting services page over at signalsfrommars.com. Just go all the way to the right on the menu. You'll see work with me, hover over that, and you'll see podcast services and sponsorship. Let me help you make your podcast stand out. Speaking of sponsorships, Signals from Mars is sponsored by listeners like you and also by great sponsors. If you've got a brand, product, or service that connects with rock and metal fans, I'd love to work with you. Our audience isn't casual. They're collectors, concert goers, and gear buyers who support the bands and brands they love. Sponsorship packages start at just $150 a month and include on-air mentions, social media plugs, and even product features. If you want to connect with a loyal rock and metal audience, head on over to the sponsorship page on signalsfrommars.com to learn more. Welcome, everybody. So the beginning of the episode was a little different than usual. Yeah, so thanks to some storms in my neighborhood, my backup internet connection kicked in. And in the meantime, Ben and Nuno from A Wilhelm Scream were left staring at a frozen image of me and them kind of going back and forth trying to figure out what had taken place. And when I came back, you hear part of what we were talking about. I thought it was funny. Nuno mentioning that, he wore a hat for the interview specifically. So was funny. I thought it to be funny anyway. So, yeah. So, this is a little different for what, I usually do on Signals from Mars, but I've always said this from the beginning that everyone likes what they like. All right, I'm a big fan of Bad Religion, of Ramones, of Rancid, of all types of punk rock, which I think intertwines with metal in a lot of aspects. And on the band's new album, Cheap Heat, that's A Wilhelm Scream's new album, Cheap Heat, you're going to hear all types of intertwining of punk rock with metal in different aspects, different hardcore aspects as well. It makes for an easy listen. I'm going to say that during the interview. And I've said that a lot recently in interviews because there are albums that are being released that are less than 30 minutes long. And before you know it, the album picks back up again and you're listening to it again. It's like, wow, this, it's a really good album. You know, it's easy to listen to where it's like, eh, that's a skipper. That's a skipper. No. I think if you're into any of the bands that I mentioned, if you're going to go in with an open mind to try to discover this band, if you don't know them already, I think that it's easy to get sucked into this album. It's a really good album. This is a fun chat. It is a long chat. I want to thank Dave over at Earsplit for helping set this interview up. I do want to thank my patrons as well. You can become a patron for as little as $2 a month and see videos from bands like a Wilhelm Scream and all types of hard rock, metal, punk rock, anything that remotely could intertwine with all things heavy on the heavier side of rock. Just go to signalsfrommars.com and you'll find links over to the Patreon. Again, for as little as $2 a month. Also, submit your 10 favorite albums of 1980. We're going to be discussing that shortly. You can send that to signalsfrommars@signalsfrommars.com. Thank you for checking out the interview. And let's get on with things. So the first thing that caught my attention when I got the promo was, wait a second, Cheap Heat, is that a wrestling reference?
It is.
So I was reading the promo and I saw that later on. I'm like, all right, cool. So I can actually bring up some wrestling things with you guys.
you can. Trevor's really like the guy when it comes to like wrestling stuff. Like he's always dropping like wrestling terminology and stuff. So.
Yeah, I enjoy wrestling for sure, but Trev's always, the album title was Trev's idea and fits well, great with the vibe of the record and all that, even though there's no like wrestling specific songs or anything, but he's always listening to like behind the scenes podcasts and like on his phone on just speaker when he's like taking a shower or anything. He's always in on the wrestling tip for sure.
Well, they're is a reference to a Stone Cold Stunner in one of the songs, though, isn't there?
There is. Yeah. You're good.
Yeah, man.
That might be. Do you think that's the only? There might be a couple more now that I think of it.
Well, you know what? It's funny because in both cases, like with the like Cheap Heat,
right?
Like it, like that sounds cool. Like if you know nothing about, you know, kayfabe or any of these like strange kind of industry terms, the like Cheap Heat sounds pretty badass, you know what I mean? And so it kind of had like a double, it worked both in a couple different ways. And then with the Stone Cold Stunner line, like it's not really like about, you know, the finishing move. It's like, oh, when you got like, you know, when you got like your girl next to you, you know what I mean? She's like, she's a Stone Cold Stunner, you know what I mean? Like yeah. She's a stunner. And so
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio. If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
It's great because you picked up on the wrestling move term. And then thematically in that line, it's like, you know, with my Stone Cold Stunner next to me, like, yeah. So he's talking about his partner, you know what I mean? Or I mean, whoever's listening to the song and put themselves into it, but
yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty clutchy to pick up on both of those.
Yeah.
favorite wrestlers for each of you.
Oh gosh. Mm.
And I'm only asking this because all time? 13-year-old asked me the other day, who's your favorite wrestler? I'm like, now or all time? Same thing.
Yeah, all time or right now? Like, that's tough. I was raised in the 80s, so I grew up on a lot of WWF. Mm-hmm. Then, like most kids, when they hit a certain age, moved on to other things. Got back into it with the, you know, WCW reemergence, kind of rebirth in like the mid to late 90s.
Right.
So I'm going to give you one from the 80s and then one from kind of my newer guys, which is still 20 plus years ago. OG favorite wrestler. I'm going to go. Gosh, this is tough, dude. This is tough. OG favorite wrestler. Iron Sheik, maybe. I liked heels a lot. Okay. Iron Sheik was just so hateable, like as a child, like it was just perfect. It just made sense. You know what I mean? So he wasn't my favorite because I thought he was cool. I thought he was awful. And that's what made him so great, you know? And then when I got into WCW, they brought in a lot of luchadors.
Right.
So I was really into the high flyers. And Rey Mysterio to me was like, he laid a lot of the groundwork. Him and La Parca was great. And obviously Guerrero was great, but Rey Mysterio Jr. was like my guy in the 90s. So there you go. Iron Sheik, Rey Mysterio Jr.
Okay.
I remember, I'm sorry, Victor, go ahead.
No. I was just going to ask you if you had a favorite. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. I mean, I think, you know, Nuno went deeper into wrestling as a kid. I remember though, I went to a match at the Cow Palace in SF, and I remember Sting was my favorite. And I was getting into like death metal and stuff. So I think I just liked that he looked like one of these Norwegian black metal bands.
Yeah, yeah. Didn't always though. He used to look like a glam band guy.
Yeah, true.
That's
true.
The thing I remember for OG WCW with the bleach blonde hair and stuff.
Yeah, but
the colorful face painting.
And then the crow guy starts dropping down from the rafters with a baseball bat. And I was like, yo, Ben, I'm with you, dude. That was actually pretty, really badass. I kind of slipped up. Sting was great.
Yeah. It was a
great finishing move too. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Iron Sheik too, because it just reminded me, like, my introduction to Iron Sheik in the 90s and stuff was on the Howard Stern show. just him on Stern all the time. He made me laugh so hard. So I liked him even better.
Yeah. He's exceptional.
Yeah.
He was great all the way up to the end. I mean, he was unfortunately had a lot of substance issues towards the end. Sure. But I mean, he was a trip to read on social media and all the stuff on Stern was.
Oh my God. Yeah. He was a delight, bro.
Yeah.
a lot of parallels between touring bands and wrestlers. I mean, watching all the Dark Side of the Ring stuff, it's like, boy, a lot, you know, so adjacent to like the 80s glam metal and thrash metal and all the stories from that. It's just, you get, it's extreme lifestyle. So you get wrapped up in the dark.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
It's a lot of that behind the ring stuff. And they just did the Into the Void, which is done by the same people as well, which is really some dark shit, though, man.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
But like, you had to touch on what Ben said earlier, like, you know, these guys, there are a lot of parallels between like our world and theirs in regards to not only the entertainment side of it, but like just the day in, day out of it, you know, like, you know, certain guys get sick on the road, guys get hurt on the road. You know, we're not getting body slammed or nothing, but, you know, shit happens. So when you get to see like the extremes those guys go through, you're like, holy smokes, you know what I mean? All that for, you know, a place in kind of a niche entertainment world. Well, I guess not really niche. It's huge, but multi-billion-dollar corporation. What am I talking about? But you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's not like you're coming home and your family's talking about who won, you know, what belt last weekend. You know, you're talking about whatever politics and what's for dinner and whatever else. But those guys are in there day in, day out, just abusing themselves. And, you know, like you said, like a lot of those guys have substance abuse problems because, you know, probably because they're just dealing with injuries and time down and, you know, messed up relationships from being on the road forever, you know?
It's
tough way to make a living.
And it's like, at least with a band, you got all your boys with you or whoever on tour with you. And wrestling, it's, I feel like more like comedy maybe, where it's just like, you're alone a lot. You know, you're probably alone in a hotel room.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess it all depends too, because you're saying, you know, a lot of the bigger companies, they're multi-million dollar companies. They're making a lot of money from merch and this and that, but there are a lot of indie promotions out there that's similar to Metal Act that are
absolutely, you know. Yeah, one of our good friends, Ted, you know, from New Bedford was retired, but he was a wrestler for years and years, and he set up promotions and did everything he could to bring wrestling, you know, make wrestling accessible to people in our city who maybe can't afford a ticket to go to Boston or Providence to see a match, you know, or Connecticut or whatever. So yeah, and those regional things are still popping off, man. Like, you know, you get guys coming down to his toy shop, to Gojo's toy shop, like, who are still wrestling now and doing autograph sessions and stuff like that. So it is very much kind of still has a roots in kind of a DIY vibe. You know what I mean? You can still pop off locally like a show would. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Backyard wrestling. Even Fest in Florida does wrestling with punks. Yep. It's a match made in heaven kind of.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I'm starting to actually see it here where I live, where they're starting up like small promotions, and they actually have bands play like intermission and stuff like
that. Hell yeah.
So it's pretty neat.
How about like when Haywire was doing that wrestling shit, they like immediately blow up. Like, it's undeniable. There's some fun connection between, you know, loud, fast music and you know, that kind of stuff.
Totally.
Absolutely. So it's funny because I've talked to a few different bands recently who have corrected me as far as what they're categorized at. So when I heard Cheap Heat, and you know, you read stuff online, you read how marketing people want to put bands in different boxes and whatnot, and the first thing that came to mind was a lot of what's been said to me recently. You know, hey, we're not just a doom metal band, we're not just a stoner band. We are a heavy metal band. We are a rock band. We are this, we are that. What's the weirdest thing that's been attached to you guys where you guys have said, what? I don't see it.
I don't know. Most of the write-ups over the years have either classified.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio. If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
Fight us as like a skate punk band or a melodic hardcore band or melodic punk band. And I'm like, yeah, dude, like we have songs that hit every genre there. You know, people are like, oh, they're kind of like a metal punk band. I'm like, yeah, we're that too sometimes. You know what I mean? Like, but as far as like the weirdest classification, I don't know, like emo, maybe. Oh, emo means something different now than it did back. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, Ian McKay is not in our band, so like, I don't know what they're talking about, but, I don't know. Have we ever been called emo? Maybe I'm making that up.
I don't know, but I mean, there's like a couple tracks on Ruiner that could kind of fall under that category almost, you know?
No way.
Maybe not that soft. But yeah, I mean,
yeah.
You know, all of us love that kind of stuff, early emo and indie and stuff, but I don't know. I haven't heard any descriptions too wild. You know, when sometimes people say, oh, they're a hardcore band or they're a pop punk band, and I'm like, that's interesting. Like, I wouldn't call it that, but then again, I don't really have a proper phrase to call it. Like,
yeah, that's how I feel too. I'm like,
yeah, ultimately it's a punk band, but you know, I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. And I grew up in New Jersey, so I've always felt that bands that are from the Northeast, from Jersey on up the coast, have always had a certain type of attitude, swagger, aggression to them, where I think it kind of has a lot to do with how fast-paced life is in the Northeast. Listening to your music, listening to Cheap Heat specifically, I get that from you guys. You know, I definitely would not peg you guys from any other part of the country. Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. We even go one step further and drop like street names from like that nobody outside of some people, not even in the city, would not catch the reference about some far north end street that gets dropped in a lyric. You know what I mean? But yeah, we've always thought like, and I'm like, I like what you said there, like being from New Jersey, you saw, you know, a lot of bands. And I feel like those bands not only kind of use or kind of metamorphosize that pace of life and like kind of the gritty, cold attitude sometime and use that in their music. But I also think that kind of the edge that comes from a lot of bands out here in the Northeast or whatever, it's just that it's hard. It's hard to make it. Yeah. So if you've made it to a certain level, you've already busted your ass, like playing shitty shows, driving overnight for sometimes for years before you can get in front of like a nice crowd in the city or something like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think we definitely channel a lot of like our region into our music. But like our region kind of shaped us too. You know what I mean? Like you were saying, you know what I mean? The pace of life, or sometimes just being locked in the house for like 3 months because it's freezing cold outside. You just in the basement jamming, writing tunes, you know what I mean? So, yeah. And I mean, being from Jersey, you know, all the great East Coast bands are from Jersey. Even if they say they're from New York, they're from Jersey, man. Like, so, you know what I mean? It's really something. And we're really happy to be a part of that, like kind of Northeast kind of, you know, community of musicians. We take a lot of pride in that, you know?
Yeah.
Ben's from the opposite coast, you know what I mean? But like their music is hard as hell too. You know what I mean? Like the hardcore scene out in California has always been popping. And like, sometimes I remember being an East Coast kid growing up, like, what are these guys so, how are they mad? Like they don't have to ride so the nice, subway, man. Dude. They don't have to like step in piss puddles. It's Los Angeles, man. Like it's sunny, you know? But I mean, it just goes to show you know, like, things, regardless of your situation regionally, can still be the same. You know what I mean? Like we're still picking up on the same vibes, you know, similar undercurrents or whatever, you know, in the scene or in society.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was cool coming into the fold in 2023. I've known these guys for 20 years, but being the California kid joining the band, it's like, you know, it really is all the down to the slang and, you know, how Nuno and Trev pronounce their R's and their lyrics, you know what I mean? And everything, it's just who they are, you know what I mean? They're New Bedford guys, you know what I mean? And it's completely funny because with anything, I guess with hip-hop, with 90s punk, with 2000s metal and hardcore, with anything, there's always like a defined difference in the coasts. And I think it is totally what you said, Nuno, like it's the conditions, it's the lifestyle, it's, you know, all these things. And it's usually a little grittier, like, you know, even like, the boom bap stuff versus the G-funk stuff. And
for
like,
sure, for
it's
sure.
Just like, there's a lightness out here. Not to say that there's not hard, cold as ice bands, but Wilhelm's always been unique to me in that sense that it's like, it was a style heavily influenced by a lot of the West Coast stuff. Well, obviously a ton of East Coast stuff, but in
for terms sure, of a ton of West Coast stuff,
but it can't, they can't, inevitably will have their own flair, you know, their own style and swag. And I like that a lot about the new record too, is they put that on Front Street like completely.
Okay. Yeah. I was actually going to ask how much New Bedford colored the band from the start. So it's, you kind of touched upon it there, Nuno, and Ben, for you to come in to the band, you know, as you're saying, you've known them forever, but it's different knowing them to actually being a part of the unit and actually having to live, you know, the same things that they're living or seeing things firsthand. How do you feel that New Bedford has colored the band, and how has it helped color you as joining the band itself?
That's an awesome question. I mean, I love New Bedford so much. I had only been there before I joined the band. I'd only been there once or twice to hang with the guys. But since then, I mean, it's like my home away from home. It's the other place I spend most of my time outside of California. And I love it. I mean, it's just it's just got so much heart, and it really was clear from the start how it informed the band. I'm like, it all made sense, just meeting all their friends, all their homies that they've had for 2+ decades, and just everyone's families, and you know, hanging out, walking down the streets nonstop, and exploring the town and seeing all parts of it. It's like, it really clicked in and made sense, and you know, how it kind of built those guys' characters, you know, in a specific way. And to me, clicked right in place as to why they've never stopped and been around for 20, but always gone hard and never given up. And just like the persistence, that kind of like that hardened quality of the East Coast, you know, which a lot of bands wouldn't have been able to stand the test of time, you know. And New Bedford kind of stands the test of time, you know. It's an old city. It's a strong city. So it all made sense to me. Yeah. And I love it. Shout out Poor Farm. Shout out Purchase Street. Yeah.
Nuno, the other thing that I wanted to bring up, a lot of people that I knew growing up were Portuguese, especially because my father came from the construction industry, and a lot
of,
there were a lot of construction workers that were Portuguese in that era. My family descends from Spain, and it's always funny to talk to people that don't imagine there being like rock, metal, punk influence in Spain or from people that are Hispanic or whatever.
Right.
So for you growing up and getting into this style of music, was it always accepted within your family? Were you seen as an outsider by your friend or by your friends or family or other people that were Portuguese?
it was interesting. My family were very, pretty much recent immigrants. They immigrated in the 70s to New Bedford, which is, you know, one of the, outside of Newark, New Jersey, like the second or third largest Portuguese population outside of Portugal. That was a trip to me when I found out, because like growing up here, it's kind of, you're kind of in this like, yeah, everyone's a little Portuguese, but outside of here, like, you know, no one else is Portuguese. We're all here, you know, and finding out there was a massive Portuguese population in Newark and all throughout New Jersey. What was kind of cool, I think, because of my my mom and my uncle's age when they came over here, they were still kind of in the mix. You know, my uncle was kind of a mover and shaker. He would, you know, he played bass a little bit. He loved, whenever he would babysit my sister and I as infants, he would always play like, you know, Pink Floyd records or like Thin Lizzy records or whatever he had that seemed to stoke us out. So like the rock and roll stuff was huge. He loved it. He was a young, you know, kind of full of life Portuguese who was just out there loving the American kind of scene, you know? So that kind of stuff was always in the house. And even though Portuguese people are generally stereotypically conservative, kind of Catholics, like, you know what I mean? Like, oh, that's bad stuff or whatever, you know? I think at the time it was kind of okay. Like, so, as I got older, and you know, I was left alone at home a lot with a record player and my mom's and some of my uncle's record collection, I would just come home and like put on records all the time and just rock out. Like I would mess with the RPMs to make like songs faster or slower and creepy or whatever. You know what I mean? Music, that kind of stuff was totally fine. When I got into kind of like the hair metal and then like early like rap and hip hop music, I didn't play that around the house. I listened to that at my friend's house because I knew like some of that stuff was like, okay, you know, like a little bit would have been a little bit too much for them. But yeah, MTV was on the house all the time back in the 80s and 90s. So like Metallica and like, you know, as I got older, Headbangers Ball was a thing for me. So, but everyone was asleep. So like it was okay. I think probably more difficult for a lot of, you know, children of immigrants is to like go to your mom who busted her ass for 25 years to get her, you know, a degree and provide for her family and go like, I'm not going to college. I want to do rock and roll stuff. I want to be in my band forever. Right. That's a tough sell for most parents. It's an even tougher sell for like a poor, I've got to get, I hope my mom doesn't watch this, hard Portuguese, you know what I mean? Like hard working, what are you doing with your life? You got to make some money and do this the right way type parenting. But hey, you know, as things moved along, she realized like I'm doing something I love and that it's brought me around the world countless times, introduced me to some of the greatest people I'll ever know in my life. Mm-hmm. And she softened up a bit too now that, you know, as she got older and she's like, hey, you know, maybe it's a good thing you didn't go to school. Like she was a professor for years. She's like, the kids are idiots anyway. Like they don't learn nothing. Like, thank God you have a passport, you know, what I mean? Like type shit. But it was different. You know, a lot of Portuguese kids in our area couldn't listen to Metallica. They couldn't wear, you know, band shirts. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It was tough for some of those kids. So, but I think that's true of most kind of hard work and blue collar immigrant communities. You don't want to, you know, the nail that sticks up gets hammered down type shit. You know what I mean? So it can be tough. And I'm sure it caused a lot of rifts back in the day. Yeah. Kids coming home with like an earring or some shit. You know what I mean? And then hardcore Portuguese dad thinks you're gay or something. Like, you know what I mean? I'm sure that happened all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so it was different. But I mean, our culture here, like, is also very supportive. The family's huge. You know what I mean? And like, no matter what, like, you know, whether you're a drunk who's trying to get better, crash his car, like your family's embarrassed, but they're going to take care of you. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm pretty proud to be, you know, Portuguese American. But then again, I'm one of the lucky ones who didn't get his ass slapped around when he was like caught listening to, you know, Black Sabbath. Or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. A lot of similarities, believe me.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is album number 6 for you guys. Was there anything specific that you guys wanted to do with this album? I mean, before you guys start writing an album, do you set up like a map that you guys want to follow, or you just kind of let things fly?
I think you let things fly and then whatever sticks, you make the map out of kind of like ideas are always coming and flowing and being shared. I think in general too, in our experience, like the mood kind of dictates the vibe of the record. So if you're writing songs that are just like, oh, this is pretty pissed and fast, you know what I mean? Like you can be like, oh, I like this, you know, to get into that pissed fast mode, you know what I mean?
Right.
And, but I mean, our band is very, very dynamic, you know what I mean? So, I feel like this record is a little bit more straight ahead, like in your face, like punch you in the gut type stuff. Mm-hmm. But there are moments in some of these songs that you're like, whoa, like that turn was crazy. Like, this isn't the same punch you in the stomach song right now. They're on like this weird bridge and it's like beautiful. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's something that happens. But for years, since even with Ben in the band came in with songs like, check this out. And those songs are all on the record. You know, that's Ben's writing. You know, that's not me, Trevor, and Nick in New Bedford, like jamming ideas. You know what I mean? That's this powerhouse that we now have in our arsenal being like, boom, check it out. And that kind of gets us onto that. I can't remember exactly how you phrased it, but kind of like into that mode, so to speak, where, hey, this is what we're doing now. This is ripping. You know what I mean? So that's my experience from it. Ben, I'm sure, has a similar but different view of it, right?
No, I mean, yeah, that you put it wonderfully. The first thing you said, especially with like, is dead on. Like, you know, I think the intention in general was to make a super fast, piss to the point, ass kicking, like leave it all on the table, like no frills, really. Record, because the band has done that a lot in the past, and there's moments of that on the last record, but the last record, Lose Your Delusion, was very super sincere, kind of the most personal in some ways that Trevor and Nuno got, you know, lyrically, you know, not to speak for them, but and so it's just, as a band, you know, 6 LPs in, it's like you have a lot of bags of tricks, you know, musically, lyrically, vibe wise, and it's, you know,
this episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio. If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
Doing the same thing too many times in a row, it's just a natural thing to go, okay, yeah, let's get back into this mode or something, from do these kinds of parts from past records. And for me, it was really easy to come in still objectively, because Wilhelm was my favorite band of all time and still is, but I was a super fan, you know, putting out the records and then joining the band. So I still I guess maybe I have a more objective lens coming in fresh. And so I kind of wrote all the my favorite kind of Wilhelm parts or whatever, and they ended up being very shreddy and fast, because I'm just like a metalhead, you know, from my teenage years, and I love fast music and stuff. But yeah, what Nuno said at the beginning, like, we kind of wrote a bunch of songs, you know, everyone was writing riffs and vibing, and you know, once, if you're going for a full length 10 songs or something, once over half of them, once you have 5 or 7, you're like, okay, this is a certain vibe, you know, like, okay, well, this is definitely, let's lean into this. And, you know, maybe a couple songs that are not breakneck tempos, just so it's a nice listening experience and it's not just like fatiguing. But yeah, I mean, there were two songs that were going to be on the record. One is like a long epic journey. And the other is, and it just didn't, it was too sprawling to fit in the kind of punch you in the face, shorter songs, let's keep it flowing record vibe. And the other song was just too heavy lyrically, like very personal. And the tone of the song is just very, very sad and beautiful and kind of like, and it just didn't fit. Like, you couldn't put it anywhere in the record. You'd be like, wow, this is a deviation in mood completely. You know what I mean? And lyrically, it would have been like kind of a deviation of the storyteller kind of cinematic thriller perspective we were going for with this one. So it's interesting. It's always like, and those songs are so good. We're going to release them later on this year probably, but you know, it just becomes clear halfway through or sometime through with like what it's shaping up to be and what should be the opener, what should be the closer, what song doesn't fit, you know, all those things. Yeah.
Cool. And the cool thing that I'm hearing from you guys too, is once Ben, was included in the band, you know, you were afforded the ability to write for the band, where a lot of other bands would bring someone in and you would have been like the last person to have any input whatsoever. But it seems totally. Like the opposite, you know?
Yeah, we felt the collaborations, it's a no-brainer. Like, if you've been writing music with the same people for a long time, you kind of, not that you fall into a rut, but you kind of, you have a system.
Yeah.
And not for nothing, sometimes those systems can need overhauls. You know what I mean? When a guy like Ben comes in with, hey, I got songs. Like, there's no better situation. There's no better situation in music, in collaborating. Because now you're like, oh yeah, let's see what you got. Holy shit, I like this. What else do you got? Or like, hey, I might have a part. I really like this part. I might have a bit that might fit into that part too. Can we, do you mind if we wedge some ideas in here? It's like, absolutely. Ben's like such an easy guy to collaborate with. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's been in a bunch of bands too, so he knows how the flow goes. You know what I mean? Trevor's not this like dude who's like, nope, I don't like Trevor's always like, please, more ideas, yeah. More ideas. You know what I mean? More is more is like one of our, like, you know, long lasting kind of mantras in the Wilhelm Scream, you know? You know, a lot of people, sometimes less is more. Nah, more is more. You know what I mean? All the ideas. Yeah. Because then you've got just, you know, then you've got this amazing kind of quiver full of ideas that you can just fire off or mix them up. Like, there are songs on this new record that were like not put together quite right, but we knew something was there. Mm-hmm. Take this chunk out. Put this chunk here. Cut that one in half. All the ideas are great ideas, even if they're not clicking right away. They're great ideas. So you just got to do that fun shit you do in a band and like chop and move around. Maybe, oh, that thing that was the intro, that's not really it. That's a bridge, dude. You know what I mean? Like that kind of stuff. And like I said, Ben's been in bands for a long, long time. He's been putting bands out. He's got an ear for this shit. So it's one of the greatest things, like, to have someone come in with their own ideas, especially when they're as kick-ass as Ben's were, you know? Sorry, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass all day, Ben.
No, be careful. You're going to make me feel good about myself.
Let's take our shirts off, bro.
I appreciate it. It's very sweet of you, Nito. I do want to say one thing, which is, like, I think the coolest part for me about it is very Lifetime movie, but, like, Trevor Riley and Brett Gurewitz are, you know, I see your Stranger Than Fiction record. I have a Recipe for Eight tattoo here. But, like, you know, those are my top two, like, greatest songwriters, like, heavenly. Where did they get, how do they channel this and write these songs and these riffs and these lyrics stuff? And so Trevor's songwriter, you know what I mean? And Wilhelm's always been a collective, obviously, you know, but, like, Trevor as a songwriter really, it informed my DNA since 2003 or four. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, whatever I'm contributing to Wilhelm now is informed through him. It's like, that's what's made my writing. So when I hand it back to, you know what I mean? When I present riffs, I bet it feels like a Wilhelm scream because that's in me. Like, mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? All my past bands were all informed by Wilhelm scream some way or another. And so it's kind of cool to end up in the band where you're like, oh yeah, I think I could write sufficiently for you guys because you're the reason I write like this. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So it's really, so, you know, Trev's an idol of mine songwriting wise. So and even in the songs I brought in, like, the things I would bring in, I would definitely, like, yo, this is still too Ben Murray. We got to Wilhelmify this. And, like, you hand it off to Trevor, he adds a completely different part on his guitar, you know what I mean? On his side. It's, I'm like, there it is. That's, there we go. I needed the Trevor Riley. I needed the Bri Robinson on this. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that's what makes it beautiful. And I got to see firsthand, like, how that process happens. And it just worked out really smoothly, but it's been really cool, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of really cool intricacies with the guitar specifically, where there's a lot of things in songs that have caught me off guard, like, oh shit, where'd that come?
Yeah. That's that Wilhelm shit right there, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How is it working with Trevor as a producer? Because a lot of times when bands self-produce stuff, they don't know how to say no to things, where, you know, you'll listen to some people's albums and you're like, wow, the ideas are there. But if they had another voice to kind of tell them how to maybe cut this out or improve the sound here or there, or stuff like that. It's, some bands do it great. Others, it's kind of a head scratcher why they do it. But for you guys, what's it like to work with Trevor as a producer?
For me, like, as, you know, having, I mean, Trevor and I have been at this since 1996 or something, right? And the only times we've ever actually kind of had a producer or someone like exactly you said, like someone going, hey, maybe extend this part. Hey, maybe why don't we go for this sound on this part? The only real times we ever had that opportunity we're in the blasting room with Bill Stevenson and Jason Livermore engineering and kind of producing us, but Bill had a real hands-off kind of approach with us as well, because I think he didn't know what the fuck was going on in our band either. You know what I mean? But he certainly would come in and be like, hey, on this part, like, I think, you know, he would have his producer ear. Trevor Riley, growing up in his dad's project studio, surrounded by music his entire life, I feel like the producer in Trevor was always in there.
Okay.
The engineer part of Trevor, you know, was also building up. So as those two things kind of started to really, you know, take off, Trevor's now working with a ton of bands in his studio. Mm. He's the de facto kind of producer for a lot of these bands. He'll tell you himself, you know, he'd be like, hey guys, check this out. 99% of the time they're like, holy shit, amazing, thank you so much. You know, the kind of stuff you really would like to have that outsider ear, or the guy who's like in the studio feeling out the vibes and being like, oh yeah, okay, I get it now what you guys are doing. Hey, let's try this, or maybe let's switch this up a little bit, because you know, I'm hearing things like, you know, that maybe you're not hearing there. Mm-hmm. In the past two records, with Trevor, both, you know, engineering and producing, it's been great because he's got the idea. He's got the vision. You know what I mean? He's worked on this song ad infinitum. Every aspect, every minute detail has been thought about and combed over, you know, with a fine tooth comb or whatever. Every now and again, though, I'd be like, oh, I wonder what it'd be like to get like this dude to come in and listen.
Right.
Because like, I feel like we'd probably laugh 90% of the producers out of the room. Like, yeah, get the fuck out of here. You don't know what you're talking about, dude. You don't get what we're doing, dude.
Right.
So like I've always had the utmost respect and trust for Trevor's ability to know what the end product should be. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And he, you know, he'll make you ride it. Like, dude, get in there. I need five more of those. Whatever you did on the last one, give me three more of those. You know what I mean? I'm like, okay. You know what I mean? I might not know why he needs five of me saying fuck yous or whatever. Like, I don't know why, really. Maybe I thought the last two were good, but he's like, no, come in here and check this out. Boom. You know what I mean? It'll be like, I flew two that way. The best one right up the middle. Check this out. And I'm like, oh man. Yeah. That's why, you know what I mean? Like, so in that regard, like we don't want for a producer, mm-hmm. you know, we've got one of the greats in our band. It would be fun maybe to have someone come in like that we trust and like, and, you know, gets us to be like, hey guys, like this song that you're not putting on the record, that needs to be on the record, dude. Like mm-hmm. that's cool. You know what I mean? Like, and again, we were offered that luxury a few times with the Blasting Room sessions, and they were excellent. You know, those records were phenomenal. Mm-hmm. There were songs that we went in there with, and Bill's like, nope, that's not making the record. Like, you know what I mean? You're like, oh man, like, dude, like, well, we worked on that. You know what I mean? Like, but that's the way it goes. That's showbiz, baby. Ben's worked with countless producers in his own bands and with bands that he record or puts out too, I'm sure. So I don't know what your take on that is, Ben, but.
No, it's Trev is like, dude, he's such a workhorse. He's just, I mean, you know, like in his words, it's his mental illness, you know, but he's a perfectionist who, you know, who likes imperfections too. Do you know what I mean? But he'll work on it until the bitter end. And it's like, even I have a funny screenshot in my phone that it's like, I think a few nights before we turned in the master or whatever, it's like Trevor Riley uploaded 77 tracks. It's just like new mixes. Yeah. You know? He's just, dude, when we got home from Europe, he's been in there like every day, like 10 plus hours a day, just, and when he's not in there, like he's in some other part of his house with YouTube on, with like amp shootout videos and the latest plugins. And it's like, he's a student of the game. You know what I mean? Right. And he never wants to stop improving and learning. And that's really inspiring to be around. And it's also, absolutely. Like, yeah, a lot of other producers might just be like, they've had their way for a long time. They come in and they kind of go, yeah. But they're not kind of constantly striving for, you know, new technology or new methods. And, you know, and so it's just really cool. And it was fascinating. I've never met someone that works as hard as him on, you know, and cares as much, like passionately about it. And yeah, it's just awesome. And it for us, it was so crucial to be able to just like record in this house, you know what I mean? And not have to drive or fly out somewhere and, you know, do the whole thing. And yeah, like Nuno said, like at this point, you know, six albums, it's like, I think we know ourselves better than anyone, and Trevor. So there, from moment one, there was no doubt in my mind. Like, I mean, it sounded awesome from the start, you know, even when it was just tracking drums, but it's just like, I have no doubt this thing's going to be a beast. And Trev and I would have talks, you know, on his stoop, we're smoking. We're just like, yeah, this isn't sounding quite right yet. And like, you know, just be like, none of us have stress because we're never going to let anything out the door that isn't just right. You know what I mean? Right. And completely up to our standards. So yeah, he rules. He's really great at what he does. And yeah, it was cool. Really smooth tracking process and all that.
Okay. Often I hear that people switch from drums to guitar are more rhythmic in their writing than just people that start out playing guitar. Would you feel that's a fair assessment with Trevor as well, or do you think that doesn't apply?
Ben and Trevor both were drummers before they were guitar players.
Yeah, there's three drummers in the band.
I was about to jump right in and be like, 1,000,000% correct. You are 1,000,000% correct. Like in their cases, like you can tell. And I think that's just one of those. I think it's a very cool thing. It's very lucky to have two drummers, you know what I mean? Or three drummers in the band, you know what I mean? And again, like whether it's guitars, you know, the syncopation of certain things that way, Trevor's also constantly thinking about how the melodies and how certain lines get delivered in conjunction with this beat that is going with this guitar. Mm-hmm. So you're riding that or whatever it is, you know what I mean? And that's all drummer brain. You know what I mean? That's 100% drummer brain. And we're very lucky, like I said, to have three drummers in the band.
Yeah. Even writing the songs and working them out. There would be many times, a handful of times where it's like, we were working, oh, what do you mean? And Trev would jump behind Nick's kit and be like, maybe like something like this. And then Nick would jump back in and be like, maybe this. And I would jump back in. We're like alternating on the kit just to work out the part, you know, like, but yeah, and Nick always, no matter who programs the demos and comes up with the original, you know, when you write riffs and you're a drummer, you like, there's no question in your mind what the beat is when you're writing the riff. Like you might change little things or fills or.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio. If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker. Because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
Different accents, but it's like, you know, it's going to be a D beat or a mid-tempo, whatever. But like, and Nick always has his way of like, Nick's another, and Brian, but we're talking about drums here. Nick's like style and flavor and swag, it's like, that makes it sound like Wilhelm. So it's like, if Trev and I were to record the drums or something, or like show him exactly what to, that we want it like this, it's like, that wouldn't sound like Wilhelm at all. You know what I mean? Right. Nick's just a beast, and he'll come up with insane fills and reprogram the demo drums. Yeah. It's a very like cool process that comes together to make the final thing. But
yeah, Nick always takes whatever Ben and Trev say to heart. At the same time, he's like, fuck you guys, I'm the drummer. That's a great idea. I'm going to put my spin on it or whatever. If I don't feel like doing all that crazy shit you're telling me to do, I'm going to find a way to do some real Nick Angelini shit in the same vein of what you're trying. But I feel like that's true of a lot of not just drummers, but could be a guitar player being like, hey, man, like, hey, why don't you try this? And be like, OK, I'll try that. Yeah. OK, I'm going to make it cooler. You know what I mean? Like kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's the beautiful thing about being in a band, that everyone enjoys collaborating. You know what I mean? Like, no one ever. I mean, sometimes, it sucks when someone's like, oh, come on, dude, shouldn't it be like this? And you're like, I don't know. No. Like, you have those moments. You know what I mean? Like, we're best friends in a room together. And like, everything doesn't always, you know, everything's not always, you know, peachy keen. Sometimes you fight and go like, no, it's like this. No, it's like, no, I'm telling you, it's better this way. And then, but in the end, dude, all that head button and collaboration is why these songs and these you know, records mean so much to us. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it takes a lot of trust in each other because I guarantee you there's moments, there's no way around it. There's moments in the record, I'm sure, whether they're a second long or something, that when we were writing them, someone was like, I don't know if I'm feeling that or so, you know, or I am feeling this completely. I go, guys, trust me. And as it goes by, it just starts making sense. And like, you forget that you maybe, I don't know, wasn't crazy about this or that or the other thing. And everyone does a good job at maintaining their passion and like selling their idea while not being too sensitive or like, you know, taking right. things personal, because it's never personal. It's never like, none of us would ever, and we all hand in fire, like straight fire on the riffs and the lyrics, but it would, none of us would ever be like, yo, that riff sucks, or no, that part's like, we're gentlemen with each other, and it's all positivity. If someone doesn't like something, it's more likely that they'll be like, yo, that's cool, but what, like, what if we did this, and like kind of like kind of build on it and not just go, no, I'm not thinking that, you know, like. So yeah, it takes a lot of compromise, but it always just comes out making sense and feeling.
We're all at the end of the day, we all want the same thing. You know what I mean? Like, we all want each song to slap as hard as the one before it, if not harder. Sometimes the pill is a little bitter when someone's like, hey man, like, you know, Trevor might come to me and be like, hey man, that second verse, like, punch that up, man. You like the first verse, you killed it, bro. Like, let's go after some great lines for the second one. And I'm not married to any of my shit. You know what I mean? If my homie who I've been making music with forever mm-hmm. tells me like, hey Nuno, I know you. I know what you're capable of. I see something here that I know you can make better. Dude, thank you. Thank you so much for that. You know what I mean? I don't want to be like good enough. You know, none of us want to be good enough.
Yeah.
And we're not sensitive about it, about our stuff. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be like, well, I'm taking my lyrics and I'm going home. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not that, you know,
yeah.
It does sometimes, you know, I've got pride. Certainly we all do. We're all, you know, on stage with, this is a thing. You got to have a little bit of an ego to be doing what we're doing here. But never that. Never when it comes to sharing ideas or telling your buddy like, hey man, hey, that's cool, but the other part was so good. Like, why not? But you know, hey, just work on a little bit more. Hey, work on this a little bit more. Absolutely, dude. Happily. Thank you for pointing it out type shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, we all, like Ben touched on it. Like, we trust each other, like the highest level.
Right.
So Ben's not going to come at me like personally, like be like, Nuno, you like, that sucks. You know, even if he thinks it does, he's going to find a way to come at me in a way that I'm not going to get offended, that I, you know, and be like, hey man, this isn't really popping. Could we try this? Or like, hey Nuno, could you write a little part for this section? I envisioned some vocal type thing going on in here. And I'd be like, whoa, awesome, dude. Yeah. I didn't know that was a section for me to write for, you know, type shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like, yeah, that trust and collaboration, that's top tier Wilhelm shit. Like, that's just what we do with each other. And I feel like that's the best way to get the best product. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It makes it what Wilhelm sound. Cause it's like, it, you know, Nuno, even when the songs we worked on together, on the record, like, you know, there, I remember even times where I was like, what if you did, you know, it could be the last yeah. word of a chorus. And you're like, nah, it should be like that. And I'm like, in hindsight, those little moments, I'm so glad, because it's like, I want it to sound like Wilhelm. I want it to sound like you. I don't want it to sound like Ben Murray, whatever my preconceived idea. That might sound too much like one of my past bands. Like, I want sure. Wilhelm to be Wilhelm. And same with, like, you know, drum parts, anything. Like, supplying yeah. some meat, potatoes, demo, and Nick's like, nah, that ain't gonna cut it. I'm gonna do something way cooler than that. And I'm like, think it's gonna take readjusting for my brain to get used to it. But yes, like, this is what makes Wilhelm the five-headed beast. You know, the kind of, a friend described it as like watching us live is like watching the inner workings of a clock. Just things just like constantly, everyone's just going, and it all makes sense. But it's just, you could watch any part of it and people are just going off, you know? So, yeah.
But aren't the best bands like that? I mean, if you guys were
my favorite
playing the same thing or just kind of going along with things, you know, it just isn't as interesting, I would think.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, for this style, I think especially in the, you know, but I think also it's like, it's kind of quite the opposite. Outside of me, when I drive the Vettura van and I'm listening to death metal or something super technical and whatever, like all of us really, and me included, like, love simple music. Like, we love indie rock and like real, like mid-tempo songs and songs that have two parts, and hip hop and the most stripped down. I think you can't write convincing technical shreddy music without having a solid foundation of like songwriting and like less is more music and like knowing, because then it just might be riff soup, you know what I mean? And no one wants riff soup at all. They have to have intention, you know? So if it's just you gotta absorb everything to make the songs kind of more meaningful. So
over the last few years, I've noticed that a lot of bands are going towards putting out albums that are in the neighborhood of like 30 minutes long, which is what you guys have done, which I think is really neat, because especially when you receive the promos, like they repeat by themselves. And before you realize it, you're already halfway through the album again. You're like, all right, I'll just do it all the way to the end again. That was such an easy listen. You know, it was enjoyable. And then before you realize it, you've listened to the album three or four times straight, as opposed to...
Ben, he's on to us.
We got him. That's the formula.
You're on to us.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I mean, for so many years, like with the advent of the CD, well, we've got 74 minutes, so we have to put 74 minutes worth of music on here.
Punishing.
Yeah. That's the point. Even if you love a band, it's like, oh, is this finishing?
It's right. Yeah. It's a waste of songs, to be honest. It's like these days in 2026, it's like, you know, you still see rap albums that are like 17 tracks and you're like, my God, you know, and they're playing a different game because it's just streams. A lot of these are interludes, 30 seconds. Like they know what they're doing. They're getting more streams and stuff. But back in the day, it's like double albums and stuff like this. And every track is 4 minutes. It's like, hey, different styles. If you're Sleep or a stoner band or, you know, any of these things, you should have 6 minute songs. Outside of a couple, it would never fly. You know what I mean? Even like, you know what I mean? That would never fly in this style. And it's not fun to listen to. Like extreme metal's the same way. It's like, who wants 50 minutes of that? I mean, my God, who wants a 5 minute song of that? Like, there's just too many parts, you know? And yeah, don't overstay your welcome. And there's plenty of other Wilhelm music in our catalog. You know what I mean? There's 5 other albums. And it's like, yeah, we just want, same with our live show. We're not going to get up there and play an hour and a half for you. Like, it's too much.
That's so too much.
You gotta know the vibe, you know? And I'd much rather people be like, let's start that again. Than like,
exactly.
Ooh, I even want track more 10. Kind of a... And then it's like track, or you know what I mean? If there's 7 minute songs, you can't get to track 10. What if track 10's the best? You know what I mean? It's like on our record, the closing track's one of my favorites. It's like such a ripper, you know? There's no filler on this record at all. But like, it would be a shame if people didn't get to it. And still with the stats, dude, I see all these analytics. It's abysmal how many people don't get to like the end of even like a 30 minute record. So you're kidding yourself if you're putting out a 50 minute record these days. Like, it's just good luck. Good luck. Like, you better put your best stuff on the first half of it, because ain't no one getting to the last 20%, you know?
Right.
Crazy.
So. Yeah. Also, I mean, with a lot of bands, especially bands that have been around for a really long time, if you're only playing one or two songs live, what's the point?
Dude, that too. It's a great point. You're going to play like with this new record, we're going to play 2 or 3 of the singles on tour. It's like, oh my God, what do we bump out? You know what I mean? Like, there's fan favorites from every album. So it becomes this thing where you're inevitably playing 2 tracks per record or 3 tracks per record, maybe 4 at the most. Right. And people want to hear so many deep cuts. And you're like, unless it's like a second night in the city, you gotta play that. You gotta choose, you know, you gotta pick and choose. But
why put out 17 songs and then be like, oh yeah, we're gonna play 1-2 of those, like, you know what I mean, live. Like, that's the only time you're gonna hear those. Hopefully they're in the first 7 songs. You know what I mean? Like, just avoid all that, dude. Avoid all of that.
And it makes sense too. It's like, it makes sense why bands that have been around as long as Wilhelm or longer, it's like, it makes sense why album shows or album tours start making sense here and there. Like, we wouldn't want to do that, a whole tour of that kind of thing, because it's just too much being stuck in the past and kind of, you know what I mean? It's just, it's cool to do pop-up things here and there, but we always want to focus on where we're at currently. But it makes sense, because it's like, where the hell are you going to hear track 9 off that record ever, unless you fly out to the city to see them play it, you know? And I think that's cool, and, you know, if there were ever an opportunity to do like you know, bands do weekends, like a huge band will do like right. three nights in Brooklyn. Like I would love doing different albums, you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. But otherwise, you know, it's probably not going to happen how you want it.
No, absolutely. And even if the album is huge, I mean, I've read interviews and heard interviews from people saying, yeah, by the time we got to track whatever, people were kind of lost. So it was like kind of cool to play the, you know, to revisit, but we noticed that the crowd was kind of like lost because they didn't know the latter half of the.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Also certain songs are just not very great live songs. Like, yeah. You know, all our stuff has a lot of energy and stuff, but you'll notice reaction. You'll notice the energy of song to
absolutely.
Song.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's just some are more built for live, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Where's the best place for people to buy Cheap Heat and ensure that you guys get the most amount of money back in your pockets?
Take it away, Ben.
Just Venmo me or Nuno personally. No, I'm just kidding. creatordestructor.com for United States. That's obviously our label, my label. And that's, you know, but also if you're in Europe, Evil Greed, if you're in the UK, Lockjaw Records, and then Canada, Thousand Island, and we're in Australia, we'll be carrying it soon. We'll announce that. But that all is just through us. It's through the label. It's the same pressing of records. You know what I mean? And so all these labels we work with closely and we love them. So they help us out regionally. But if you're in the States, creatordestructor.com, that feels 100% to us. Yeah. Okay.
Cool. And where should people go to keep up with the band?
Instagram is the most like active, for sure. You know, so I think it's at Wilhelm Scream Official. But we're also on Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that. But our Instagram and also our personal Instagrams, like when we're on tour, you know, Trevor is nonstop doing Q&As and funny stories. And cool. So those are all listed on Instagram too. So, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. So much like the album, we've actually recorded for an hour. Wow. And it has not felt like it. So I thank you guys for making this a really cool interview. It's been a lot of fun talking to you guys. And like I mentioned before, the interview will come out in a few weeks. Ooh. And I hope that everyone checks the album out. It is a really cool album. I know that at least the people that listen to my shows have a diverse palette of what they listen to. So this will work in nicely with a lot of the people that follow the show. So
Killer, Victor, thank you so much, man. It's great questions as well, man. Really, like you said, it flew by. So
yeah,
that's how you know it was good.
That was great. Could go all day. I appreciate you, Victor. Thanks for having us.
Awesome. Thank you guys. Have a good one.
Cool.
Thanks so much, buddy.
See you.
Thanks again. Peace.
Later.
Bye, man.
Bye, Nuno.
Later.
Podcast. You can subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.